This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One:30 in the afternoon here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Brett Hedekin. Brett is a 17-year NHL veteran and Olympian. He won the Stanley Cup with the Carolina Hurricanes in 2006. Nowadays, he's the radio color analyst for the San Jose Sharks and is co-founder of online team management service, rosterbot.com. Brett, good afternoon and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Brett, we obviously, you're working with the Sharks now as their radio analyst, and I mean, anytime you talk about the Sharks this season, you sort of have to look back at last year and the way that it ended after the Sharks had the 3-0 lead against the Kings. They lost 4 straight to lose the series in 7, and there was a lot of upheaval with the Sharks in the offseason. A lot of talk about Joe Thornton. Would he, won't he, you know, leave the team? No longer the captain of the team, is an assistant captain, though. If you had to name one leader in the dressing room on this team, who would that be?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think you're right. A lot of things had to happen last year after the losing 4 straight in the playoffs when all they had to do was put 3 periods together and they would have won that series, but L.A. goes on to win the Stanley Cup. And I think a lot of soul-searching has happened over the course of the summer. They have gotten younger. They've moved a few players out. They brought in players like Mirko Mueller, a defenseman, 20-year-old from Switzerland. They've got a kid, Chris Tierney, young kid, 19 years old from him. Barkley Goodrow, another young player. To answer your question, I think they're looking for 23 leaders. They're looking for young players to be able to step up and be able to have their voice be heard. You know, you look at they win a game, and Anton Niemi has a shutout, but tonight you've got Alex Stalock in the net. And because they're trying to show this team and all the players on it that every guy is important. And so I think they're just trying to make more accountability for every player, and every game, every position has to be earned on a nightly basis. So I think these are all positive things that the Sharks are trying to take advantage of.
You know, Brett, they didn't make too many changes, the Sharks didn't, in terms of players, but one move that they did make was internally, and that's taking Brent Burns, who was a defenseman. They put him at forward for the past, you know, season and a half about, and then they moved Brent Burns back to defense. He's lined up with the aforementioned Mirko Mueller in game one. Do you see this being like a permanent move, or do you see, you know, possibly come trade deadline again, if there's the right defenseman available and the Sharks have a need at forward, he could possibly go back?
Well, you know, early on in the training camp, watching Brent Burns, you know, go from forward back to D, I was like, well, this is not going to be good. But every game in the preseason, he got better. And oddly enough, a guy like Mirko Mueller, like I said, how young he is, you'd never think this player could settle Brent Burns down, but that's exactly what he's done and the way this kid can play. I'm really impressed with how he can just make subtle plays as a young kid, you know, making plays that you don't see a young player make, especially at defense in the National Hockey League when he's never played any games other than the other night. So I've been just impressed on how these two guys have played together and how they're not panicking out there. They're not trading their problems off to somebody else. They're holding on to it when they have to, taking a hit to make a play, and then making the subtle passes. So Brent Burns has actually settled in, and I can't see him moving anywhere currently the way he's playing on defense.
Brett, I think you'd agree there's obviously always pressure on coaches, but you'd agree that there's probably a little bit more pressure on Todd McClellan, even if he's not going to admit it publicly, but just to erase that the memory of the series against the LA Kings. As far as you're concerned with Todd McClellan, as far as him as a head coach, what's his biggest challenge this year as a head coach?
Well, I think this whole organization, I think you can't really look totally at Tom McClellan, although he's the guy that's on the ice with the players, and he's the one that's going to have to get the most out of them. But even the management's feeling it. I think everybody in the organization's feeling it because they know that they're going to have to prove it now. They're going to have to find a way to win those big games in the playoffs. And I think for Todd, I think the biggest challenge that he might have is just sticking to his guns, making sure that there's no more free passes. Guys just can't be handed a letter. Guys just can't be handed ice time. And I think that's what this playoff series really showed them, is that you have to earn it every day. And if you can stick to that, and it's going to be hard some nights when you want to go back to a guy like Joe Thornton or Patrick Marleau, who maybe didn't play a strong game, and you take them off that first power play unit. And you got to punish guys like that. Unfortunately, it's called accountability. And so those are the nights that are going to challenge him. But I think if he does it, the team has already come a long way in a short amount of time, making some strides. So I think that'll be beneficial for him moving forward.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is San Jose Sharks radio analyst Brett Hedekin. Brett, you look at the Sharks forward group, and it's probably the envy of a lot of teams in the NHL. Anytime you can trot out Pavelski and Thornton and Hertl and Marleau and Couture and Nieto as a top six, you're doing pretty well there. I want to talk about the third line, though. A guy who had a very good game in a season opener against the Kings. That's Tommy Wingles. Had a couple goals for the Sharks against the defending Stanley Cup champions. You know, what's the ceiling for Tommy Wingles as a player for the Sharks?
Well, he's a guy that can be versatile. He can move all the way up and play with a guy like Joe Thornton if he has to. He can play with a guy like Logan Couture, which he's done a lot last year. But right now they've got him with Wingles. And Chris Tierney, you wouldn't think, again, a young player would be able to go from the OHL and just step right in and not look out of place. This line had five scoring chances in the first five shifts of the game in L.A., really based off of the hustle of Tommy Wingles and the heads-up play of Chris Tierney. So this kid is the centerman. Tierney is just a strong young player, a guy that didn't probably think he could play already at this level, but he's doing a great job. But the added benefit of the physicalness that Tommy Wingles can play and how he can, he's never going to let a player off the hook. When I say that, I mean, when he's on a forecheck, he's not going to turn away. He's going to finish it. And guys that never played against him, they're be ready for that. And that's what he adds to the team.
Hey, Brett, we talked about guys that they brought in. The Sharks didn't bring in too many guys, but a couple guys left on the back end there, and veteran guys. Brad Stewart goes to Colorado. Dan Boyle just got injured, actually, goes to the Rangers. Which of those two is a more significant loss in the dressing room?
Well, I think, Dan Boyle has won a Stanley Cup from Tampa Bay, and when you lose a player that has played in the big games and has won the big games, that's always a big loss, to Phil in the locker room. I think ultimately the ingredients wasn't working for some reason in that room, and it wasn't, I wouldn't say, Dan Boyle or Brad Stewart, or it's just there had to be a shakeup, and they went to try to go for younger players, and, Mirko Mueller is a player that has stepped into that role, and I know, Jason Demers, Matt Irwin, these two young guys as well, they've got a lot more responsibility that they have to take on, and sometimes moving Dan Boyle out and just saying, hey, you guys are our guys now to move forward with. They have to realize that this is a responsibility that they have to take on.
Brett, we saw David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News tweeted out about half an hour ago that Alex Stalock was first off the ice and he's going to get the start. We wanted to ask you about the goaltending because towards the end of the year, Stalock was pushing Antti Niemi for starts in net. I guess this is a difficult question to answer maybe at the beginning of the season, but which goaltender do you think Todd McClellan has more confidence in now, and who do you think will end up getting more starts this year?
I think they're going to go with both goaltenders quite a bit this year, and I think Alex Stalock, pushing him onto Miami last year has given him the right to get more ice time, and it's challenged Alex Stalock to be better and more consistent, particularly obviously in the playoffs. So you can't just all of a sudden turn the switch on the playoffs. You've got to give guys like Alex Stalock time during the regular season to get that ice time to continue to work on his skills against the NHL. And he talked about that this morning in his press conference. He said, listen, it's 23 voices as a group. That means our goaltenders as well. Alex Stalock hasn't played enough games in the National Hockey League yet. I want to get him more ice time. And it starts right tonight. So
20 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and our guest is Brett Hedekin, the San Jose Sharks radio analyst.
Brett, you mentioned Chris Tierney is a former London Knight, and Jets fans are going to get a chance to see him tonight, but probably aren't very familiar with him. What does he bring to the table?
Well, if you ever have a chance to watch him play, he never puts himself out of a passing lane. He's always got a stick on the ice, plays very smart. He's a two-way player. He'll come back hard and be good defensively. But not only that, he is really confident with the puck in the offensive zone. He doesn't panic with it. And so I'm just really amazed at his confidence so far and just the way he plays positionally at such a young age. And I think that's what you should watch for if you're watching Chris Tierney play.
You know, Brett, I was watching last night. They had a replay of an old game from 1994, not too old. And you were on the Canucks and against the Flames, Game 7 of the first round. And it got me thinking, you know, the Sharks had trouble last year in Game 7, and you've played in two Game 7s of the Stanley Cup Finals in 94 with the Canucks and in Carolina in 06. What do you think? You're around the Sharks, obviously, on a day-to-day basis. What do you think the teams that you were on that were able to win or close to, you know, that won the Cup or won throughout the playoffs, what was different about those teams than the team you're covering now?
Well, I think, you know, the things I've been talking about is that accountability. And I think the teams that I have played on that have had that success you're referring to, I look at those teams and we had 23 guys on that roster. And every player was important, but every player was accountable. And it didn't matter if you were Pavel Bure back in the Calgary series and that year, or if you're Rod Brind'Amour when we're talking about Carolina Hurricanes. Mm-hmm. Every guy made sure that they had a job to do, and then the coaching staff made them accountable to it, and every player respected it. And if you didn't do your job, you didn't get the ice time you needed or you wanted. And I think that slowly but surely, when you build that confidence within your group and that accountability, you can do great things. And I think that was one of the biggest things I see with this team, the San Jose Sharks, trying to make those changes this year to making sure that players come into camp. And I think that's one of the reasons why Joe Thornton is the assistant captain again. He came in, got his mouth shut, probably the best shape I've seen him in his career, and hasn't come in here to try to do anything more than just lead by example. And I think the players are now, respecting that.
Final question for you, Brett. You know, you look across the ice tonight, and behind the bench is a former coach of yours, Paul Maurice, head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, and you played for him in Carolina. You know, for Jets fans and listeners here, what can you tell us about Paul Maurice? Like, when you think back about playing for him, what stood out most?
Well, first of all, I have a ton of respect for Paul Maurice, and I really thank him for some of the things he helped me with in my career and just building confidence. He's a great coach that I think really takes a lot of pride in knowing how to get the best out of each guy. And every guy's different. He holds players accountable, like I've been talking about, but also he builds confidence in a player. And he did that with me when I got to Carolina. He traded me for me. And, I walked in that locker room, and he pulled me into his office and said, listen, I love what you do defensively. I think you're underrated defensively. That's all I got you here for, is to make that first breakout pass like you do. And when I heard that, it's finally like, oh, man, I finally have a coach that just believes in the things that I can do. Doesn't want the offensive side that everybody expects out of you, but just a good, sound game of defense. And because of that, I played my butt off for him and had a lot of confidence, and we had a lot of success together in Carolina together. So Paul Maurice is a great coach. I think he's gotten better every year. He's like a fine wine, I think. Just keeps getting better with age, and it's great to see him out there right now on the ice with your Jets.
Brett Hedekin is a radio analyst for the San Jose Sharks. Brett, thank you very much for doing this. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, guys. Hey, thanks for having me on. Should be a good one.
Yeah, take care, Brett. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Brett Hedekin, San Jose Sharks radio analyst, for joining us to preview tonight's Sharks-Jets game, 9 o'clock here on TSN 1290. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes on tsn1290.ca and, of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Ezzy, you are...
Well, I'm getting a little excited here. That was a great interview, though. I was telling Richie before the show today, talking about having Brett Hedekin on. Aside from Scott Niedermeyer, I think he was the defenseman that I like to watch the most. He had wheels. He had serious wheels. One of the greatest pure skaters, mm-hmm. I think you guys would agree, too. A lot of guys nowadays have great wheels, but he could skate back in the day. He was a good player. Good interview.
Absolutely. If you missed any of it, it is available for download, like I said. Let's transition a little bit away from the Jets. We're going to come back with Jim Fox at the top of the hour to preview the Kings-Jets tomorrow night. Chris Pronger has been hired to join the NHL's Department of Player Safety.
Speaking of great defensemen.
Speaking of great defensemen, indeed. So this is the Department of Player Safety that's now headed up by Stéphane Cattel.
It's like hiring James Wright to get more goal scoring in the National Hockey League.
because Pronger and his had a little bit of a reputation as somebody who would play on the edge, as it were.
If you were in front of the net with Chris Pronger, you're getting a cross check to the back guaranteed.
Guaranteed. Yeah.
But if you went in front of the net, yeah, he would cross check you in the back.
He made you pay to go.
You knew
in front
it was coming. You knew it was coming.
The way he played the game doesn't bother me with him being hired by the Department of Player Safety.
Okay.
I find the timing of this is all very bizarre because technically, mm-hmm, he's still an active player,
yes,
being paid.
He was doing scouting for the Flyers as well.
That's fine. He was, yeah, an active player being paid by the Philadelphia Flyers. Now, he hasn't played in years since that last game here in Winnipeg, mm-hmm, and he's not going to play again because of the concussion issues. And the reason why he hasn't officially retired has to do with the salary cap and wanting to get paid the full contract that he signed before his injury problems really came
to
effect.
He gets paid regardless. It's just if he retires, then he wouldn't get, voluntarily retires, he wouldn't get paid.
That's right. Yeah. But if he retired, if he filed his retirement papers, the $4.9 million cap hit would apply to the Philadelphia Flyers because the contract that he signed at the time was a 35-plus contract and always counts against the team, unless, in this instance, he's on injured reserve. To me, do you think there's a conflict there between Chris Pronger and the Flyers and being part of the NHL's Department of Player Safety? Let's start with that question first, and then I will have other questions after that.
Well, I guess the distinction is injury or retirement, because is Mark Savard the same thing?
Sure.
You know, is he retired due to injury, or is he just injured? And I mean, the thing that I have to say about this is Chris Pronger has said he's never going to play again. So if he has no prospect of playing, it's an odd arrangement, Drew. I think it's weird that the NHL would go down this road just to raise it as a kind of an issue, bring it up as an issue. Now, it's not. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody that the release was put out 5:45 on a Friday on a long weekend.
Right.
Right. I mean, they're trying to. I know they want to get guys in the game who are knowledgeable and involved. And I find it interesting that he's leaving Philadelphia. He obviously didn't see a rise up there with Ron Hextall getting a spot because he was very instrumental behind them drafting Samuel Morin, which was their top pick, not last year, well, not this past draft.
2013 draft.
But the year prior, big defenseman kind of in his mold. Obviously, Pronger was, held in higher regard when he was drafted. But I guess, Drew, the point is, if it's a 35-plus contract, see, I have an issue with it, because a 35-plus contract, and for our listeners, that means a contract signed by a player after he's 35 years old, it counts against the cap regardless of whether or not the player is injured or retires.
Right.
Right? So he wants to get paid so he doesn't formally retire. They pay him. If he retires, they have to pay. They don't have to pay him, but that money is up against their book. So it's complex.
The fact that he is on injured reserve means that the salary charge that he would receive,
yes,
does not count against the Philadelphia Flyers cap.
Right.
If he just retired, it would.
It would, exactly. Now, my problem is this. If you're 35 plus, one of the reasons for that contract being in there, for that stipulation being in there, so there's not long-term deals.
Sure. The cap violating deals.
You probably won't play. But the other issue is because guys who are 35 plus are more apt to get hurt than guys who are 35 and under. So if I have an issue with it in the sense that, you know, you took the risk to sign him. You can't predict these concussions and injuries, but it's, you know, they're getting around the system there. And I mean, within the rules, but the NHL put those rules in place. So I just think it all smells a bit.
Are the optics of this?
They're very odd.
Are they bad or are they just odd?
I could see it both ways, guys. It's bad in some senses. In other senses, I could say, oh, it's within the rules. There's no issue. I mean, it's kind of odd that he's getting paid $4.79 million, whatever it is.
$4.9 million,
and I'm assuming paid some salary by the National Hockey League. But if you're not retired, like
Well, these guys are, and you mentioned Mark Savard, Richie, and Savard, and I was arguing this with Remus during the break, but these guys are unofficially retired. They're retired, but it's not on paper.
Sure. There's like Matthias Olin in Tampa Bay. Same thing.
Call it whatever you want, Mark Savard and Chris Pronger aren't playing in the NHL again, and they've said that themselves. So if they're not officially retired, it's obviously only for salary cap reasons. And what I was saying is, you know, can they not just give him, you know, I realize it has to go against the salary cap.
Well, it's money for the player, too.
Exactly. So I guess the optics are strange. But you look at the NHL Department of Player Safety, and I know Gary Bettman was on HNL a couple days ago when the Arizona Coyotes were playing the Jets. And he was talking about it, and Stefan Quintel needs him in the Department of Player Safety. I know they've lost Rob Blake. Blake went to the Kings. He's the assistant general manager there. Brendan Shanahan obviously became president of hockey operations for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So they've lost guys there. So they need him.
But why do they need him?
Nobody wants that job. That's a problem.
Chris Pronger.
You say nobody wants that job?
Nobody wants the job.
But even that's not even Quintel's job. They have somebody to fill Quintel's job.
Nobody wants a job with Quintel, and they can't get a big name. And this is the biggest name they can get. I don't know why they think they need a big name, but that's apparently what they think.
That was my follow-up. You know, if you want to hire Chris Pronger to work in the NHL front office, that's fine. I have no problem with that. Chris Pronger should be around the game of hockey.
Yeah.
He knows the game of hockey. He was a great defenseman, a fabulous defenseman. Why not wait 3 more years? You've gone this far without him. Wait 3 more years until his contract expires. He's officially will retire at that point in time.
Yeah, but I think this goes back to what you were saying, Richie. Chris Pronger, I mean, he's been doing some, as we mentioned, this is what he's been doing. He's been doing some scouting with the Flyers.
But is that a part of his $4.9 million? That's what they're paying him for, basically, to do something for the team, as opposed to...
He wants more than
getting
that.
Another, but he's, more than that. He's got enough money. But the idea is he's getting paid another salary on top of this?
I'm talking about what he's doing, like his job. He wants more. And I didn't mean money. I meant more than that, in that he obviously, as you mentioned, probably sees Ron Hextall, and he's saying, well, can I become GM of this team in the next few years? And he wants to work.
But that, I'm sorry, he is working. I mean, he can go get another job if he really wants a job that badly. How does the NHL, how does Gary Bettman, Stefan Quintel knocks on his door and says, Commissioner, I'd like to hire Chris Pronger to be one of my deputies. How does Gary Bettman not say, well, he's an active NHL player, you can't hire him?
But again, he's not actually active, though.
Doesn't matter. He's getting paid by a franchise.
I know, but it really, as we were talking about, it should have... This rule is ridiculous in the sense that, you know, they put him on long-term injury reserve. They know he's not playing. I understand that he's getting paid, but I don't see there being a conflict of interest as far as him having to make any decisions as far as the Philadelphia Flyers go.
I don't think there will be any conflict of interest, because I'm not about to sit here and say anything negative about Chris Pronger's integrity. I think he'll either recuse himself of those ones or he'll treat it fairly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But optics of it are so Bush League.
Well, that's why it's out Friday afternoon at 5:45.
Of course, but I'm sorry. We're still going to talk about it.
Sure,
It's not going to blind us. The optics. I mean, Larry Brooks on Twitter has been, talking about this. How it's completely absurd, and I just don't see what the incentive is from the NHL's perspective.
I agree. That's a good point, Drew. I agree with you.
Wait 3 years until his contract officially expires. He officially retires from the NHL. And hire him the next day. See, I won't say a word.
I don't see it being absurd. Like, what's Chris Pronger going to do? Wait around for 3 years until...
Well, he's collecting a salary, isn't
he? He's making $5 million a year, $4.9 million. You know, go work for... You know, if the Flyers don't want you as a scout, go coach a junior team or some minor midget, something in Philadelphia area if you're that desperate to stay active.
The odd part is, Drew, sorry to interrupt, the odd part is I'm assuming that the NHL was obviously wanted him.
Absolutely, that's what I'm saying. And he wanted the job. So, I appreciate and respect your point. I guess, don't see it as being as much of a conflict, or I don't have an issue with it, because I believe, as we've seen with Brendan Shanahan and Brian Burke, guys that love the physical style of hockey, I think he'll bring a good voice.
But those guys weren't getting paid by another NHL team.
I know, but Gary Bettman's come out and said he doesn't have a problem with it. And if he doesn't have a problem with it, I don't have a problem with it, I guess.
Gary Bettman's your guiding light now.
Good boy. But what about the fact that Pronger's one of the dirtiest players ever, and now he's going to be the one adjudicating
these issues?
Shanny was tough.
Not as dirty. No, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
He was tough. Pronger was tough, but he was dirty.
Quintel liked to drop the gloves, too.
Sure. They have different standards probably for discipline, and the fact that he was a dirty player back in his day, or dirty and tough, can factor into it. And that doesn't bother me one way or the other. I mean, I can take it or leave it, regarding, the way he played the game versus the way he's now going to police the game. It's the And again, I don't think that Chris Pronger is going to put himself into a position where, you know, where he's going to, you know, be easier on the Philadelphia Flyers.
He can't. It would be similar to Colin Campbell and his son Greg Campbell. He would not have any say in any Boston Bruins, right. You know, infractions or Florida Panthers when he was there.
Absolutely. It's just I don't see why they had to have Chris Pronger this year, right now, this second. To put him into this position.
I don't know why he wants a job, but my assessment of it from afar would be he wants a job because you build a lot of contacts and you see what happened to Brendan Shanahan and you can get another job somewhere else. And clearly he thought, again, this is my assumption, with Ron Hextall, a younger guy, being named the GM, there was nowhere really to go in Philadelphia.
And there's nothing to say, Richie, that 3-4 years down the road, a team like the Philadelphia Flyers, a guy who Ed Snyder, he has a relationship with, he could become in a position with a team like the Philadelphia Flyers. A guy like Chris Pronger is.
But why would you do that now, though?
Maybe the position wasn't offered to him.
3 years from now, if Chris Pronger goes to an organization and says, you know, I'm interested in, you know, being groomed for something, I think a lot of teams will have interest in him. I don't think he needs the Department of Player Safety to build up his persona and to build up his attributes to then join an NHL's front office.
It helps contact-wise. Look at Blake Shanahan. I mean,
yeah, I get
Shanahan
that.
Interview for Calgary. When you're in Bettman's crew, you end up places.
You don't think that Chris Pronger needs the contacts of the NHL front office?
How do I get in Bettman's crew?
I think dealing with the people at the NHL and learning the intricacies of how it all works there are helpful in managing an organization.
Okay. I still think the whole timing of it all is a little bit bizarre and a little bit just
I just
odd.
Wonder, see, like, have they clarified whether he's getting a paycheck? Mm. Wouldn't be doing
He's getting direct deposit.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Jim Fox, LA Kings radio, television analyst, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's a Los Angeles Kings television analyst on Fox Sports West, Jim Fox. Jim, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Thank you.
Jim, heading into this season, obviously the Kings have now won two cups in the last 3 years, and the season after the first cup probably wasn't what they would have hoped for. A little bit of the quote-unquote Stanley Cup hangover. You know, how much different do you think the Kings, or how much did the Kings learn from the last offseason when they were cup champions versus this offseason, and how are they sort of bringing the two all together?
Yeah, it did not show, obviously, in Game 1. They lost 4-0 to San Jose. But it did show during the preseason. There was a noticeable difference in the approach of the players. It was very businesslike. It was very professional, all of those types of adjectives you would want to describe it as. It was just kind of straightforward. It seemed like they'd given a lot of thought on how they were going to approach the season, and it just did have that feel around the team that they were ready, and they had learned from the previous time. Now, obviously, game one didn't go well, but it's just one of those things where this group feels that all the time they've spent together, not only over the last 3 years, but even before that, you know, this core has been together for a long time, so that experience, they feel, is going to, you know, be very important and allow them to go a long way again.
Jim, it's amazing to me that if you look at the Kings roster this year, 1 year after winning the Stanley Cup, the roster is almost identical. They obviously lost Willie Mitchell, and they lost Lyndon Vey, who's now on the Vancouver Canucks. Are you surprised they were able to basically keep their complete roster intact from last year?
Not surprised, no. I think everything that happened was kind of predictable. The Kings are up against the cap, so the Willie Mitchell situation, that's the only player, basically. In the lineup tonight will be 19 of the 20 players that dressed for Game 5 last year. there'll be 15 of the 20 that dressed from 2012. So, yeah, it's together. You know, cap comes into it where you know you can't go out and really sign any free agents. You know probably who you're going to lose, and Willie Mitchell was that guy. I mean, the contract he picked up from Florida, the Kings just could not match that, and you can't blame Willie Mitchell from going there at that point in his career. So I think everything's kind of come back. Dean Lombardi has been pretty open with his plan, and it's always been about getting younger and better at the same time, and that younger part allows you to spend less money on players. But, you know, when you've won 2 in 3 years, sooner or later those players will want to get paid, and that's where the Kings find themselves right now. So they've locked up most of their guys, and they have them locked up for long term. I think the next big guy to come will be Andre Kopitar, and of course he might be considered the best player, so a lot of things are going to have to be done. That cap is going to be a serious issue, and it's going to be difficult to keep teams together.
You know, Jim, we had Eric DeHatchick on from the Globe and Mail 2 weeks ago in our season preview show, and we were talking about how impressive the Kings were obviously last year and that they're returning basically the same lineup. He said the key to him is, and probably for Daryl Sutter, who he knows quite well from his days working in Calgary with Daryl Sutter covering him, was Jonathan Quick and his workload. And he thought Sutter being able to manage Quick's games played, you know, throughout the regular season will be very important in terms of how he performs in the playoffs because he's had some injuries before. Do you agree with that?
I think that they are more comfortable with the approach they're taking. I think that they have a lot of confidence in Martin Jones. I think they like the way that Jones is step by step by step in the minor leagues up to the NHL, to the point he is right now where they're going to give him more games. You know, Jonathan has been hurt both years the Kings went to the Stanley Cup and won. He's just coming off a wrist surgery. Nothing that they thought was very serious, and actually Jonathan said he was kind of surprised them that it ended up having surgery. He didn't think it was going to be that bad. But it's one of those things where, you know, West Coast, the travel is much easier, but still on the West, it's more difficult on the East. Mm-hmm. You're considering all those types of things, and it's you want that. You want more of a balance. And I think, again, you've got to go back to Dean Lombardi. Martin Jones was part of that plan. I mean, he wasn't with the Kings when he started the season last year. They had Ben Scrivens, but they kind of knew that was kind of a rental situation where they were just buying time for Martin Jones to get ready. That's what happened. Now he's in position to be a backup and get some games.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Jim Fox. Jim is the LA Kings color analyst on Fox Sports West.
Jim, we wanted to ask you about Tanner Pearson. He was obviously part of the That 70s line in the playoffs last year with Tyler Toffoli and Jeff Carter. A lot of people don't know this, but actually Tanner Pearson is actually still a rookie this year. He played 25 games in the regular season and then matched that and played 24 games in the playoffs. As far as Tanner Pearson goes this year, is he going to be a staple on that second line, or are they going to try to keep that second line at least together for the start of the season? What are they really expecting out of him as a player this year?
I think that they are expecting consistency. I think that's what he's given them. I think they expect him to stay on that line. I really do. I think they expect him and Toffoli to be the second line wingers. Now, again, when you say that, that means you drop either a Williams or a Brown down to the third line, if you want to call it that way. So the way you number the lines gets a little bit tricky. Usually it ends up being based more on ice time or maybe role responsibility. And, you know, usually that second line is given more of an offensive responsibility. But I think with Tanner, the one thing he brings, and he brings it every night, is that speed factor where he's pressuring the other team. And I think that's an element the Kings did not have before. And he gets to the puck so quick that he has time to do something with it when he gets there. And that's another element the Kings didn't have. So, you know, they realized they probably needed more size down the middle. That was the reason for the shift of Jeff Carter there, to be there on a consistent basis. And I think the young kids, they're expected, if you're talking about expectations, I think they're expected to be what you consider top six and really punch in some offense.
You're really right about that, Jim. Tanner Pearson's really improved his skating, taking it to the next level. And guys, maybe we mentioned him earlier, not the fastest skater, but a solid stay-at-home guy, Willie Mitchell. What do you think the Kings will miss most about him going to Florida?
That's a great question. I think you just have to, if you're a player on the other team, and I'm going, you know, the Thorntons and the Getzlaffs, and you know, with size, Willie Mitchell was able to neutralize that size because, you know, he's pretty tall himself. He uses a very long stick, and that reach becomes a factor. And I don't know if you can teach that. You know, it's something you kind of have to have physically, but then you have to learn the timing of when to use it, not get off balance. When you go for the poke, you can't be falling and you know, because they'll take advantage of that. So I just think it's going to be exactly the type of player that Willie is, and that he's a shutdown defenseman. So those big guys, those defensive responsibilities, they're going to miss it there, and they're going to miss him on the penalty kill. I mean, that's going to be a fact. Now, will someone else be able to take over that ice time? You know, does it fall more to Jake Muzzin? And he saw a lot last year with Drew Doughty. Braden McNabb is the guy who's getting the ice time now because Muzzin's hurt the first couple of games here. So there is some uncertainty there. I think that, of course, you know, you lost Willie Mitchell, and he's not a point producer. But believe me, in that second part of the game, the defensive part of the game, he's on top of things. And that's something that you're going to have to find a way to try to recreate and try to get that same type of shutdown guy somewhere, wherever it is. It doesn't matter.
Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is LA Kings color analyst Jim Fox. Jim, being here in Winnipeg, we obviously have particular interest in Mike Richards from nearby Kenora, Ontario. You know, what do you see for Mike Richards going forward? I mean, we know that last year was a struggle. There was some talk that potentially he might be a buyout candidate. That obviously was misguided, never came to fruition. You know, is Mike Richards going to regain sort of that second line center form, or do you see him more of a third or fourth line center going forward in his career?
Well, if you look at the efficiency, and if you look at Kopitar and Carter, then he would have to be at least third line, mm-hmm. because I don't think he's going to play above them. That's just the way it is. Now, Mike Richards brings intangibles, and every coach that he's, you know, played under and every teammate he's been with knows exactly what I'm talking about, and that is the grittiness, the face-off, the block shot, able to be a you know, power play point man, getting shots through, again, grittiness. So you're just back to that type of, you know, winner mentality. And, you know, Mike Richards, probably, if, you know, who am I to say? I'm just watching from afar like everyone else. I think Mike realized it. But if the Kings had not won the Stanley Cup, I think that buyout would have been very much there. You know, I can't pull the trigger and I can't speak for Dean Lombardi, but I think the writing was on the wall and a lot of people saw it. It had to do with, you know, contract. It had to do with cap issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to take all that into consideration along with, you know, the disappointing year Mike had. But it was really weird, guys. Games 5, 6, and 7 of every playoff series, guess who was one of the best players?
Mm-hmm.
It was Mike Richards. He found a way, whether he was a shutdown guy one night, a face-off man the next night, an offensive guy the next night, he found a way to help a team, and that's why he's back. He did spend more time on his conditioning and fitness, and that was the biggest concern last year. Dean Lombardi sat him down, went up to visit him. So I think Mike realizes the situation, and he has done so far, and he's going to do everything possible to get back where he's an impact player, because there were times last year, you know, except for those playoff games I'm talking about, that he was not an impact player. He was kind of just on the side, kind of looking in. And I think he wants to turn that around.
You know, Jim, with the new playoff structure and having to go through the division, the Kings, of course, played Game 7 against Anaheim last year and Game 7 against the Sharks. I think we would agree those are the two main competitors in the division. Who do you think is a bigger threat to the Kings?
Well, the way I look at it right now, I'm looking at Anaheim. And the reason I'm doing that is because, and I've thrown the word out a billion times already, cap. They are way under the cap.
Mm.
I think they're a strong offensive power right now. Bob Murray is their general manager and has been point blank and open saying he's going to take a look for 20-25 games, and then he's going to make a move if he feels a move needs to be made. If the Ducks could ever get a bona fide one or two defensemen, then I think they'd be gone. And I'm speaking as the Kings, as the defending Stanley Cup champion. So, you know, who would be their toughest opponent? I think it would be the Ducks. I thought going into the playoffs last year that the best team on paper was the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah.
How many times we've heard that before? but I'm not discounting them this year either. But I just think Anaheim, with Kessler coming across, it fills a 20-minute position, a position that is hugely important in the Western Conference. Your second centerman. So you've got Getzlaff, you've got Kessler. That matches up with Kopitar Carter. Mm-hmm. And if Anaheim were able to get that defenseman that I'm talking about, I think then they become really dangerous. The biggest question mark, young goaltenders, how will they, you know, sort it out come playoff time? But I think Anaheim would be the toughest competitor right now for the LA Kings.
Jim, we'll let you go on this last question. We talked about him earlier in the interview, and that was Tanner Pearson. And he sort of came as a surprise to a lot of hockey fans who hadn't watched a ton of Kings games, particularly late in the year. He gets into the big stage, and he's terrific with Toffoli and Carter in the playoffs. Do the Kings have anybody in the system this year who's also sort of right at that point where towards the end of the year they might be able to, you know, break through the glass ceiling and really give the team a boost heading into the playoffs?
That's a great question. Just coming out of training camp, in all honesty, guys, I would say no. And last year it was Toffoli and Pearson, and Toffoli was up here most of the time. Jack Farrar, who's an assistant to the general manager, Dean Lombardi, he all season long he was talking about Tanner Pearson. So we kind of internally knew about it. But you're right, I don't think people watching from afar had a chance to see Tanner and what his, you know, impact could be on a team. But it's back to, you know, what happens, guys, when you win 2 of 3 and you made a couple playoffs the year before and you're trying to keep teams together, sooner or later, you know, they sign Adam Cracknell, for instance. Again, you know what he's going to be. He's going to be a fourth line winger, but then they lose him to waivers. You thin out. You have to thin out. It's so difficult to keep teams together. So to see that next guy knocking on the door, and especially at defense, you know, recently the Kings, you know, they went through Voinov, they went through Muzzin, now they have McNabb. So they've got their young guys. They've been recycling the young guys, the Foley, Pearson, those guys. They've been recycling those guys through the lineup. And now I think that they're probably at a spot where it's probably a little bit thin right there, and they don't have that depth, understandably so, that they probably did about 3 or 4 years ago.
Jim Fox is the LA Kings color analyst on Fox Sports West. Jim, thanks very much for doing this, and have a good call tonight and, I guess, tomorrow against the Jets.
You got it. Back to back. Thanks, guys.
Exactly. Thanks very much, Jim. Before we go to break, we have this for you.
TSN 1290. Breaking news.
Speaking to the media in San Jose today, Jets head coach Paul Maurice confirms Evander Kane is out at least 2 weeks and will be reevaluated in 2 weeks' time. Well, he's obviously, they're calling it still the lower body injury.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear
knee.
That it's a knee injury.
Yeah.
I think for Jets fans, this is probably the best news they could have hoped for so far, depending on how what happens over the next 2 weeks.
It seems ambiguous to me, to be honest.
Sure, it certainly is ambiguous, but I mean, given the alternatives of it could be, you know, they could have come out and said 2 months as opposed to
Fair
two
enough.
Weeks.
Absolutely, that's I agree with Richie. It doesn't tell you a lot, but the last thing you wanted to hear was out 3 to 4 months with an ACL, MCL sprain.
Fair enough.
Exactly right. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Great song.
20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. In case you missed the news before the break, Evander Kane out a minimum of 2 weeks, will be reevaluated in 2 weeks' time by the Winnipeg Jets doctors and organization, etc.
This could be more serious, Drew.
Could be. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For nearly 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Currently closed for renovations until the 1st of November, and then they started off their 30-year anniversary celebrations. They got the Broken Lizard guys. They got the Winnipeg's Funniest Person with a Day Job finals, and they have the 30th anniversary weekend featuring Derek Edwards, Mike Wilmot, Daryl Lennox, and Dave Hempstead. Be sure to check it out. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Yeah, they've got the Cree Comedy happening too in early
Cree
November.
Comedy. Yeah,
yeah. I did a little stand-up back in the day.
Yeah,
we did it at the King Said. I remember Richie came out and...
How was that, Richie?
It was great. You weren't there.
No, well, I've seen enough of Ezzy.
Yeah, so why didn't you tell one of your jokes? You had a good joke?
I think I started off, one of my first jokes was, "Hi everybody, my name's Ezra. In Hebrew, my name means help." That was one of my first ones.
What about your do not call us one?
Yeah, there was another one of my jokes was,
can we tell this on air?
Yeah, there's no profanity in it, Drew. I mean, come on, this is a family program. I think the joke was something along the lines of, I'm excited that the Canadian government is coming out with a national do not call list. And the joke, the punchline was, I've been on girls' national do not call list since I was like 15 or something. It got a few laughs. Yeah, that was my 15 minutes of fame right there.
The best jokes are the ones that hit the closest to home. Anyways, as on Wednesday, we gave our predictions for the entire NHL season, who was going to make the playoffs, who was going to win the cup, etc. Might as well give out some award predictions so that we have everything on the record when we go back in, you know, June or whatever and say, I said that, we'll actually be able to say if you did say that or not. So why don't we start with the Art Ross Trophy? Between you two gentlemen, who do you think is coming away with the most points in the NHL this season?
I'd say Sidney Crosby.
Oh, going out on a limb to start.
Well, it's you look at, you know, the landscape of the NHL this year and you know, the injuries that were suffered last year. Obviously, John Tavares had a significant injury. Mm-hmm. Steven Stamkos had a significant injury. I'd probably say Stamkos will give Crosby more of a run for his money than Tavares. I think Tavares will probably be top five.
Pretty good last night.
Certainly top 10 in points. You can't go against Sidney Crosby. I think it's, for me, it's more so the assists. I don't think Steven Stamkos gets enough assists. Yeah. I don't think he'll win it by maybe as much as you'd think. I'd probably have Crosby winning it by about 10 points.
I think a lot of it also depends on if Malkin can stay healthy for the whole year.
He's the best player in the league.
I know he's the best player in the
year. He plays 75 games, he'll win the point title.
Really? That's, yeah. Even if he misses?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stamkos is going to have to get 70 goals.
Moving on to the Maurice Richard, speaking of goals, the Maurice Richard Trophy for the most goals in the NHL this year.
I think it's Stamkos if he stays healthy. I mean, I know Ovechkin will threaten there, some other guys, but I see Stamkos being that guy. Looks better, recovered from the injury. I'm not picking against him on that one.
Yeah, Drew, to me it's Steven Stamkos, and the only guy really in the conversation for me is Ovechkin. I think it's between Stamkos and Ovechkin. I know you had a guy like Pavelski who kind of surprised had 40 goals. Pacioretty had 39 last year. I don't think those guys, Richie, are going to be in the mid-40s or high-40s. Or in Stamkos' case, I think he could, if he's healthy, and you know he scored 60 goals 3 years ago, he could easily get 60 again.
Got the 60th here in Winnipeg, did he not?
Yeah.
No St. Louis, though.
You think that's going to affect the goal scoring?
Yeah. I think... I agree, Desi, that he could push 60 possibly. I do wonder how he performs without St. Louis in terms of goals.
Moving on to the Hart Trophy, most valuable player. It often is tied into both the Art Ross and the Maurice Richard Trophy. Is this one for Crosby for you guys, or do you have someone else in mind?
Well, you know, it's the old interpretation, right, Drew? Is he the most valuable player to that team or most valuable player in the league, like the best player? And you could argue that maybe Crosby is the most valuable player to his team just because the other players they have on that team, and some teams don't have as many good players. I usually go at most outstanding player, and so I would take Crosby here.
Yeah, again, there's a lot of good players, and you had Getzlaff last year who had a career year. Yeah. And to me, I go back and forth between Crosby and Stamkos, and I'm going to go with Stamkos. I think if he has a full year, as I mentioned, I think you know there's a good chance that he can set career numbers as far as point totals go. And Richie mentioned, you know, no St. Louis this year, and he has played most of his career with St. Louis. So you got other teammates, Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat is who he looks like he's going to play with to at least start the season. And those are two very good players, both Calder Trophy finalists last year. So I think I'm going to give it to Stamkos for me.
Goaltender, Vezina Trophy.
Well, I mean, this one, I have an interesting prediction. I think Corey Schneider wins the Vezina this year. I actually think the Vezina is up for grabs. I think the Devils is a veteran team. Forwards are old, but they're seasoned, and their defense, I know they like some of the young guys there now, and it's not a great defense, but Pete DeBoer is a really good coach, as I mentioned. I'm going out there. I'm going to take Schneider.
You're stealing my Jack Adams award winner already.
Corey Schneider's going to win the Jack Adams?
No, he mentioned Pete DeBoer. That's who I'm going to pick to win the Jack Adams this year.
Well, that's great. We're not asking you about the Jack Adams right now.
For me, Kerry,
was that one of your Cree comedy jokes as well, right there?
I'm going to go
Sam Adams for God's sake.
I'm going to go Carey Price. I think Carey Price plays closer, more games this year. I think he always has the shutout totals, and you know we know that last year was just the career year for Carey Price getting those shutouts in the Olympics. So I'm going Carey Price on Montreal. I think you know I wouldn't be surprised if the usual players are still candidates there, Lundqvist and Tuukka Rask and all those boys.
Richie, I'm going to ask you for the Norris Trophy winner. I assume Ezzy's going to give me his Lester B. Pearson winner in that case.
Shea Weber this year, because I think Shea Weber's arguably the best defenseman in the league. But Shea Weber's going to have a chance to provide offensive an offensive output, I think, under Laviolette that he wasn't able to under Trotz. So Shea Weber gets the Norris for me this year.
Yeah, I'm taking Shea Weber too. Obviously, there's tons of good candidates there. You know, for me, it's between him and Duncan Keith, and you know, Erik Karlsson. Even though I don't think he's one of the best all around defensemen, he's always in the conversations because he gets so many points. So to me, I go with Shea Weber, and that has to do with the fact that he is my favorite defenseman in the league too.
Yeah, Remus reminds me it's no longer the Lester B. Pearson; it's now the Ted Lindsay Award. So.
Oh.
Yeah, thank
What's
you.
What's up next, Mark Messier Leadership Award?
No, I didn't even list that one as a possibility. The Calder, the Rookie of the Year.
Well, you know, I back and forth on this one, too. Mirko Mueller, I think the chance to play with some of the talent in San Jose, like Burns, is going to be helpful. I think it's tough for defensemen to win this trophy, though, and I'm going to take Johnny Gaudreau because of that.
I like that pick. I'm going to go John Gibson. I think John Gibson, you know, he came into the playoffs last year, played a little bit for the Ducks, and you know, it's not really known yet who is the number one goaltender. We might not know that for the duration of the season. John Gibson is a fantastic goaltender, and I think Johnny Gaudreau is up there, and you know, Drew N, even though he hasn't played yet, I think he's in the conversation, but I'm gonna go with Gibson.
Jonathan Drew N is talked about as being the next one. You hear some other stuff that he might not be the next one as much as people anticipate. I'd have to see him play a little bit more, but interesting stuff.
Go ahead. You'll see him, I guess it's a week from now, or 6 days from now. The Lightning will be here on that Friday.
Yes.
No, sorry, 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, two weeks from now.
Are you saying, Richie, Alexandra Daigh 2.0 or what?
No, but some concerns there.
Jack Adams, Coach of the Year.
Well, I took Washington to win the division, so I'm going to take Barry Trotz here and double down.
I like that pick.
Did you guys see the picture of Barry Trotz after the first game?
I didn't see it.
It's amazing. So he's sitting in front of the podium with the Capitals banner behind him, and the way their logo is, it makes him look like he's got devil horns. We'll tweet it up on the Illegal Curve account. It's hilarious. Ezzy, have you changed your mind from Peter DeBoer?
You probably could have just told us that off air, Drew. You didn't really need to didn't need to mention that. I'm just bugging you. I'm going Pete DeBoer. I think Pete DeBoer, and I know Richie likes Pete DeBoer a lot. He took the Devils to the Cup Finals only about 3 years ago. So I think Pete DeBoer is going to win it this year. I think the Devils are back in the playoffs this year. And I think they're probably going to finish even a little bit higher than – I think they're going to finish in the top maybe fifth or sixth in the Eastern Conference. But he's a great coach. I think he's done a great job with some of the young defensemen there, Eric Jelena, and I think Adam Larson's going to have a better year this year. So
another healthy scratch again.
Yeah, well – He was a top five pick.
Might be able to buy low on that guy.
Teams. I mean, Lamoriello doesn't, obviously. Lamoriello and DeBoer obviously don't like him.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Selke Award winner, last one.
Kopitar.
I'm going to go Sean Couturier.
You know,
he was ninth in voting last year. I think he's still a long shot. I think, you know, Johnny Taves too.
You have to be able to perform offensively to get consideration for that.
I don't like that, by the way.
I do like that. Because it's a lot easier to play only defense. You got to play both sides. I like the way the rule has been defined. I mean, I like the way the award has been interpreted. Because if you don't score, it's easy to play D.
But you shouldn't have to be like a top, like Couturier is not going
to
be a top
10 scorer. You have to put up at least 50 points to me.
Really? 50? Yeah. What if he gets 49?
That's okay.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll discuss coaches that might be on the hot seat to start the NHL season. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Jets and San Jose Sharks tonight, 9 p.m. on this fine station. Hustler and Lawless from 6 to 8. Rick from 8 till 9. Richie, you're doing the pre and post with Rick tomorrow before the Kings game?
You bet. 8 to 9. And then, 8 till probably 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Thanks, Captain Obvious.
Thanks, Ezzy.
It's the commercial.
I know what it is. Just didn't really expect you to be saying it right. Let's talk about some coaches that might be on the hot seat to start the NHL season. It's been one game in Toronto, and Randy Carlyle's already, I think, been fired by most of the media in Toronto.
The Toronto media is crazy. They're like talking to Phil Kessel and Bozak about what shape. They got to calm people. It's as if the biggest story in sport hockey news is who's starting in net or who's in good shape. I mean, take a step back and just give us the news, okay? We don't need to hear you talking about Phil Kessel's body weight. Can he play the game? I don't particularly care otherwise, because there's a lot of good players. There's a lot of players in shape on that team that suck.
Hold on, Richie. Did you just ask the Toronto media to calm down?
It's unbelievable. And I know it's a battle of companies.
It's
not
possible for them to calm down.
It's just like, come on, take it easy. Holy smoke. Some of the stuff, the journalism has taken such a downturn in terms of quality. It's very disconcerting. That's another conversation for another day.
So back to the original point. Yeah. So is Randy Carlyle the number one coach on the hot seat in the
Absolutely.
NHL?
Yeah, I think, Richie. I think 100%. You look at the moves that were made in the offseason. So we're talking Brendan Shanahan coming in as president, mm-hmm. Kyle Dubas coming in from the OHL as the assistant GM. Yep. The assistant GMs that were formerly with Dave Nonis are gone. The assistant coaches have changed. So you're talking about Steve Spott has come in to be Randy Carlyle's assistant coach. Many people believe he would probably be, if there was a temporary coach, he might move in, even though he doesn't have any NHL head coaching experience. Randy Carlyle, after what happened last year, losing 12 of the last 14 games, the Leafs missing the playoffs, does he not have to be? I mean, you look at the team right now, and there weren't moves made that really dramatically changed the makeup of this team, Richie. Like, you bring in Stefan Robida and you bring in Roman Polak to crystallize the defense there and help Dion Phaneuf and help the young players, Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner. But like the top six of this team is you still have, you know, Kadri and Bozak up the middle. You've still got the same wingers. The top line's the same. The defense is essentially the same goaltenders, but you've changed everybody around Randy Carlyle and Dave Nonis. And I think that was done in case, you know, they have to make a move early in the season.
I don't think Carlyle gets fired right away. I think that they probably have their eye on Babcock if he doesn't get done in Detroit. And if that's the case, maybe they fire Carlyle in the interim. But I don't know if he's the first coach who is let go.
I should clarify here. I'm not saying that he's the first coach that gets fired. You said who's on the hot seat. I'm just to clarify, I don't think he's getting fired anytime soon. I think he's under the microscope big time.
Yeah, the question was sort of whose seat is the hottest among head coaches.
Yeah, there's others too.
It's hot. I mean, it might be the hottest. If you look at it...
How hot is it, Richie? Like 100 degrees, 200 degrees?
Well, for the year, like, will he be coaching the Leafs next year? It's as hot as can be. Will he make the season? I don't think it's as hot. That makes sense.
It does.
So it hasn't reached the boiling point yet, but it's like when the water, you just put the element on.
You're going to keep torturing this analogy a little bit more, aren't you? Other coaches on the hot seat, you know, Todd McClellan, the Jets are going to play him in San Jose tonight. I mean, if they're off to a slow start, given the upheaval they've had this year and still the talent that exists on that roster, you know, you'd have to think that it might be time for a new voice there.
Yeah, I think he's on the hot seat. I think if he was in Toronto, he'd be on the hot seat more so because of the pressure that comes along with being in a Canadian city, especially in the media market like Toronto. I think there's... that sound of fire, Remus? I think that, you know...
I couldn't even tell what that was.
I think there's one trade there before McClellan gets fired. Meaning I think that Doug Wilson will make a deal in the 20 to 30 game mark if they are not performing. That will give McClellan more time. And if a trade didn't work and they weren't going well into the playoffs or close to it or weren't going to make the playoffs, then he could possibly be on the way out. Maybe they do something like Lamoriello did in New Jersey. Put Larry Robinson in to kind of coach as a, you know, not that McClellan isn't a player's coach, because last time they went to Robinson in New Jersey, they went from a non-player's coach to a player's coach. McClellan is kind of known as a player's coach, but maybe that's something that they consider.
What about Bruce Boudreau in Anaheim?
He was on my list.
He's only under contract, I believe, for one more year, correct?
I don't remember.
One more year left? I think he only has 1 year left. Maybe, Drew, you can check that, or I guess we're on the radio. You might be a little bit hard to check it and talk. But I look at Bruce Boudreau honestly, and I see a coach who right now there's pressure on him for this team to, at the very least, you think, get into the Western Conference Finals. I mean, the Anaheim Ducks the last few years, well, especially they missed the playoffs 1 year. But you look at the team, and this by acquiring Ryan Kesler and obviously John Gibson and Frederik Andersen, there's a little bit of a question mark there in goal. Who's going to emerge? But it's a good problem to have.
Boudreau got a contract extension.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah, he's their coach through 2016-17.
Okay, forget what I said then.
I mean, I don't think... I think Boudreau can be out-coached at times in big playoff games. I don't see it being... Again, I see it being a decision after a playoff series where you think, wow, we really got outmatched.
You know, it's hard for, you know, teams like, I mean, San Jose and Anaheim, it's hard to believe that given their talent, that they're not going to still have solid regular seasons. Mm-hmm. And push comes to shove, the coaching change might happen after a disappointing playoff. Because those teams are just so good, and they play against teams that are you know, so many of the teams they play against aren't as talented that it's hard to believe that they're not, that they're going to be so bad that they won't make the playoffs or they won't go on a long run, you know, and finish respectfully during the regular season.
Well, there's also, you look at coaches on the hot seat, and again, that's what we're talking about, because people, you know, it's a topic of conversation, but think about it. Vancouver, new coach. Winnipeg, essentially new coach. Calgary's second year of his coach. Edmonton, second year of coach. Montreal, Therrien obviously had a nice run there, so there's no issue. But Paul McLean's on the hot seat because he's been there a few years. Carlisle, a couple years. You know, the first 2 years, you're never on the hot seat. Yeah. And a bunch of these coaches are new coaches now. Patrick Kwa, Bill Peters, Gerard Gallant. There's so many coaches that are new. Now, there's only a few that we can even discuss.
Well, that's right. I'm looking at the list here. And the majority of coaches have all, you know, only are still on their first contract with their teams.
Pittsburgh, Mike Johnson. We can go through the whole list. Now, it's guys like Hitchcock and Babcock who've been there for so long, but they're so established.
Yeah. Well, that's who I was going to ask. I was going to ask about Hitchcock in St. Louis because he's a coach who's sort of known to wear on his players to some degree. Now, there's talk that that has sort of lessened as he's developed as a head coach, and he's not as hard as on his guys as he has been.
He's one of the smartest minds in hockey, Ken Hitchcock.
Right, but we've
along with Mike Babcock, I mean, you're talking about the brain trust for Team Canada, right? And I think you're right, though, Drew. I mean, you look at the St. Louis Blues, another team similar to the Anaheim Ducks. You're looking at these teams in the Western Conference. The Hawks have won two cups now in the last 5 years. The Kings have won two cups in the last 5 years. All the teams in the Western Conference, specifically Anaheim and St. Louis, they want to start establishing themselves as a team that's going to start winning some Stanley Cups. And so, to me, it's Boudreaux, Hitchcock, they're on the hot seat in the sense that there's more pressure on this team to go far in the playoffs. Like, the Ducks and the Blues, they're not happy to get 110 points in the regular season. They get knocked out in the first round. I mean, how many years in a row are you going to get knocked out by the LA Kings in the first round, right?
Sure.
So I think even though those guys are more established coaches and have been coaches in the NHL for a while, they're on the hot seat. And again, that's different than, you know, are they going to be fired in the next year or two? I think we're talking about who really has more pressure on their shoulders. Like, to me, a guy like Daryl Sutter, he doesn't have any pressure.
No, it's no pressure.
I mean, the guy's won two cups in the last 4 years now. You look him talk, he's, you know, he's... he has this team where it needs to be. So
you have basically there's you know, a third of the established coaches are ongoing anywhere. Quenneville, Sutter, Babcock, unless he wants to. Babcock, Hitchcock, that kind of idea.
But that won't happen. That won't be a firing. That would just happen at the end of the year.
You have your third of guys who are kind of your new coaches who are so early in their tenure they can't really judge what they've done yet. Then you have the other guys who we're kind of mentioning here. We're a little bit in the in between spot because Paul McLean's in that in between spot now. But look at the talent that it's the other thing is look at the talent that they have. Like, look, Carlisle does not have a talented team. It's a team put together, some talent, but there's no structure to how they were put together. You know, a lot of speed, lacking toughness. They try and fill toughness, but they're not great up the middle. Their defense is pretty bad. Their goaltending can be really good. I mean, what about Ottawa? They lose your first line center. Your first line center is Turris. Your second line maybe Zibanejad. Your defense, Mathot might be on the way out. You have two solid goalies, but your offense just isn't good. I mean, it's not like the I always find it tough for coaches. Like, the expectations don't seem to be in line with the talent. And when coaches get let go for that reason, I blame the GM more than anything.
Well, I'll put you guys on the spot before we go to break. Two-part question. One, do any coaches get fired mid-season this year? And two, if so, who is that coach?
I think coaches do get fired during the season because somebody's got to blame somebody. And I thought about this quite a bit, Drew, heading into you know, this show, who would be the guys. And I know kind of Paul McLean and Carlisle seem to have the most pressure on them because, you know, the new coaches, as we mentioned. I'm going to say I think Paul McLean might get axed based on Ottawa and my expectations for Ottawa not being very high.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I don't think we're going to see a coach fired after three games like we saw with Peter Laviolette last year. Uh-huh. I wouldn't be surprised if we see one, maybe not you know, within the next few weeks, but by January, absolutely. It's tough to say. Like, I really like Paul McLean, but there is a lot of pressure on him there, and that team is, whether they want to admit it or not, is rebuilding.
And to point out, he admitted he changed from kind of being, you know, a certain way with the players to change that way last year, tried to be harder on them to get more out of them. They took a step back. It's tough. It's like a teacher with a classroom. You know, once you're one way and you try and change, it's tough. Does he go back to the way he was before and is it well received, or does he lose them and never get him back?
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
No Bruce?
This is Bruce.
Isn't it? ZZ Top?
Yeah, Tim wouldn't have made that mistake.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, we'll have to. Remus is still in the preseason form.
I didn't know we were still doing that.
We've only done it every show we've been on the station.
In Canada, shouldn't it be ZZ Top?
That's Rick's joke, Ezzy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Rick says that every time it comes on, which is often.
Really? Well, it's good because, you know what? Rick is a funny guy, and we share a really sharp sense of humor.
Little ZZ.
Little ZZ.
Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon. You know it. You love it. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Rangers defenseman Dan Boyle broke his hand in the third period of his debut with the Rangers and will be out 4 to 6 weeks. Boyle joins Derek Stepan on the Rangers' injured reserve. How impactful will these injuries be on the Rangers' quest to repeat as Eastern Conference champions?
Well, it's some significant. And reading this morning, Kevin Klein's going to move up to play on the second pairing there, and they're going to move Mike Koska up into the bottom pairing. I'm sure they'll shelter him quite a bit. He's not a great defenseman. He's more of a 7-8 kind of guy at most. It'll hurt their puck moving, and certainly with the loss of Stroman, Boyle was brought in to replace him. I don't know if, in terms of repeating, Drew, if it has an effect that much. A lot of these guys will be back when it matters most, and the East is so bad. And Vigneault's a really good coach that I don't think it'll be an issue on long term, but it may affect, and it will affect, you know, their standing in terms of home ice advantage, which didn't seem to be a huge issue for them last year.
Again, terrible news for Dan Boyle. He had all types of injury problems last year. I remember we were talking to David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News last year about all of Dan Boyle's injury problems. He was considering retiring at one point. So, I mean, it's unfortunate. And I agree with Richie. A team like the New York Rangers, who that's the strength of their team, is their top six there. You mentioned, you know, Kevin Klein goes up to play with Mark Stahl. Still a very solid team there. And we know Girardi and McDonough play half the game anyways, so
right.
It shouldn't affect them as much. I think there's more, for me, there's more of a concern with Stepan's health. You've got St. Louis centering Kreider and Nash right now, and they've actually were pretty good in the first game. But, you know, as you go down the line, you know, you're still, to me, you're really missing Brian Boyle there. He really gave them a good center, two-way center in the bottom six. We saw how good he was in the playoffs. So it's an unfortunate injury. He's only out for 4 weeks, but you got to hope that he is able to play most of the games this year, because last year, Dan Boyle had an awful year as far as injuries go.
The Toronto Maple Leafs claimed 23-year-old forward Richard Panik off waivers from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Panik had 13 points in 50 NHL games last year after putting up good point totals in the AHL. Are you surprised to see the Lightning give up on a young player relatively early in his career?
Well, you know, you get up, and when you have a lot of good young players, this is the problems that you have. You can only have a 23-man roster, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to bring in the veterans to kind of make a, you know, quest for the cup, and I think this year they really want to take a shot at it, you have to, you know, see who you think you can try and sneak through waivers. And clearly, if you're going through waivers at the end of the day, they don't have the highest of hopes for him. I don't know enough about his game, frankly, and the Leafs are willing to take a chance on a younger player, which makes sense. But I'm a little bit surprised, but then when you think about who's there and Steve Yzerman and his ability to identify talent, that's probably a bit of a red flag.
Has he? Nothing? Okay. Flames first-round pick Sam Bennett will undergo shoulder surgery and will miss 4 to 6 months. His shoulder issue apparently dates back to last season and was aggravated in the exhibition season. If you're the Flames organization, are you at all concerned about your first-round draft pick undergoing a shoulder surgery so early in his career?
No, because you assume before they take him, they do physicals and such. But if there's going to be an injury, that would be one of the more concerning ones. You know, you see how it's affected some of the players, the Jets, you know, Eric Fair, guys like that with shoulder problems, and some other, you know, guy or two on the team might have some shoulder issues. You're playing hockey, you have to take the shot. You have to, you know, your slap shots, obviously going in the corners up against the board. So it's not a good injury to have. And you hope as a Flames fan that Bennett, who's a slender guy right now, really good skater, is able to bulk up a bit and able to protect himself a little better. But I wouldn't be too concerned about it right now.
Yeah, you don't want to be too concerned, but you're obviously concerned. He's out for the season with a shoulder injury, and they expected him to play as an 18-year-old for them. It's a young team, so it's an awful injury, and you never want to see that, and that's part of hockey. But, you know, it's not something that has become a problem for him as far as being a lingering issue. So, like, hopefully it doesn't turn into that. So you just hope that the recovery goes well.
NBC studio analyst Mike Milbury spoke up this week and came out against fighting in the NHL, considering Milbury had over 70 fights in his career and once climbed into the stands to beat a fan with the fan's own shoe. How surprised are you that Milbury has come out against fighting, saying, let's grow up and get rid of it?
Well, I mean, he's been talking about that for a few years now, Drew, so I'm not shocked. I mean, you know, as a fighter, he certainly has the ability to say that he doesn't think it should be in the game anymore and it should be taken seriously. I know it's Mike Milbury, but it should be taken seriously, an experienced guy who's been at the other end of a fight. So I'm not that surprised. I mean, 3 years ago when he started with the whole rant, I was shocked, but he's really been campaigning for this, and I at least, you know, give him credit for being consistent.
Well, it only took 1 or 2 days before the take fighting out of hockey stuff started again. So, I mean, to me, this is, you're going to get this stuff. You know, I imagine we'll probably have a debate like we did last year, Drew. I think I won that debate, if I'm not mistaken. No, but I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I know a lot of guys were looking at the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Fraser McLaren and Colton Orr didn't make the team, as if that's a sign that the fighter is dying. And you could believe that. I still think, though, it does have a place in hockey. I think it's a skill. And, you know, again, if you don't like fighting in hockey, then you're going to hear what Mike Milbury has to say, and you're going to be kind of happy about that and agree with him. But if you like fighting in hockey, you're going to kind of just say, okay, Mike, he's just going off and this right. and that. But there is a growing voice to get fighting out of hockey.
Last rapid-fire question. On Thursday night after the Oilers lost at home to the Flames, a disgruntled Oilers fan threw his Oilers hoodie onto the ice. For whatever reason, this is now a thing to do in Edmonton. If you had to choose one, would you most enjoy being someone who threw an octopus in Detroit, threw the waffle in Toronto, threw the first jersey in Edmonton, or threw the first rat in Florida?
Okay, hold on. Really quickly before Richie answers here.
I know where this is going.
The guy had his phone in the hoodie.
Yeah, I know.
Like, anyways, I take your phone out of the hoodie if you're going to throw it on the ice. You shouldn't be throwing things on the ice anyways.
That actually makes me, you know, appreciate that more, because he was that mad about it. He didn't think, my phone is in the hoodie. I'm so mad about this team.
It was an iPhone 4, so he wants the 6, but...
And you threw a waffle on after eating the other 3 pieces.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
What's your pause?
I'm going to jeer overreaction to one game. See the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah. I'll quickly cheer Jordan Tutu. He signed with the Devils earlier this week. So, you know, big fan of Tutu, and you know, he'll have a nice little year with the Devils, I think.
He's under 42. Shocked they signed him.
I'm going to cheer Alex Ovechkin. He went on a date with a 10-year-old fan who's, I believe, has Down syndrome. And the Capitals, you know, it was a great gesture by the Washington Capitals and Alex Ovechkin to a fan. And it meant the world to her. So I'll cheer Alex Ovechkin for that. That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Brett Hedekin, San Jose Sharks radio analyst. Big thank you to Jim Fox. And big thank you, of course, to Paul Edmonds. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Remus and producer Tim, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks very much for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Jets and Sharks, tonight, 9 p.m. on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.